when the patient is in danger because he's physically ill, or the analyst is in danger because he's physically ill. But now we could extend into this situation. The analytic work needs a community of denial.
Welcome to the IPA podcast. For those of you who have been listeners to the past 40 episodes of this podcast series, you know that we've been focusing on analysts who bring their clinical skills to venues outside of the consulting room, hence the name psychoanalysis on and off the couch. Given that we are all facing together a crisis of unfathomable proportions, we're going to be changing the focus of our podcast. We are going to be interviewing psychoanalysts from all corners of the globe to discuss with them how their local communities are coping with this situation, how their clinical work has been affected by this situation, and also how the internal worlds of both the analyst and the patient have been impacted by this virus, as it impacts both our real fears and our imaginary fears. We're going to encounter not only uncertainty and fear, but we're also going to learn great wisdom, gifted empathy, and hope. We'll be maintaining the title of this podcast, both as a testament to our past work and as a placeholder for our future work. I hope you find these conversations both informative and sustaining. Feel free to write comments on our webpage, IPAoffthecouch.org. Thank you. Welcome to today's podcast. I'm Harvey Schwartz, and my guest today is Marilia Eisenstein. Marilia Eisenstein is a training analyst, both of the Hellenic Psychoanalytic Society and the Paris Psychoanalytic Society. She has been the president of the Paris Society and of the Paris Psychosomatic Institute. She currently is a member of the editorial board of the French Review of Psychoanalysis, and she is a co-founder and editor of the French Review of Psychosomatics. She's been very active in the IPA for many, many years. She chairs the IPA's International New Groups Committee. She was the European representative to the IPA Executive Committee. She is presently co-chair of the French-speaking Congress, and I can go on listing her many activities. She currently is in private practice in Paris and gives seminars to both the Hellenic and the Paris societies. She's written books and over 150 papers on psychosomatics and hypochondriasis, transference, pain, and masochism. And her latest book in English is titled From the Art of Archery to the Art of Psychoanalysis. It was published in 2017. As you will hear in our conversation today, Marilia's grasp of the clinical encounter is so rich and so nuanced and so able to engage these changing and challenging and difficult times that we're all struggling with. It was a pleasure for me to spend time with her. It was a delight to hear her thinking be so creative and vibrant, and I hope you enjoyed as much as I did. Here's my conversation with Marilia Eisenstein. Marilia, welcome to the podcast. It's so nice to have you as part of this project. Marilia, as we all know, the cities of the world are closed down. Cities large and small, towns and villages, were all shut down. Though I have to say that even though I've only ever been a tourist, the picture of Paris, the city of lights, being empty, strikes me as so telling and emblematic of this unique crisis that we're in. I don't know how much exposure you've had to your city in recent days and weeks, but can you share with us what it is you know about the state of your city? And then we'll talk some about the psychoanalytic community and your clinical work.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Harvey, and thank you for interviewing me. So I will tell you immediately that Paris is a real desert. It's absolutely impressive. I never saw Paris so empty. There are no cars, no pedestrians, silence. Some people, very few, are walking their dogs or trying to run, but they are very careful to be very far away one from the others. Shops are closed, everything is closed, only you can only go and buy food. And you have to have a paper that you sign yourself explaining why you are going out, because you must be asked it by the police. Well, it's not a real authorization because you authorize yourself, but you have to declare on your honor that this is absolutely useful for you. I can go to the doctor, go to the pharmacy, or go to buy food. Those are the things we are allowed to do. Now, I will tell you that I'm very, very impressed. Because, you know, French people are usually totally unruly. And now I feel and I see that they are very obedient and they seem to show a great sense of civic sense. That is very impressive and very new for me. I imagine that it's due to the seriousness of the situation, because in the beginning, you know, we were all, and myself too, we were all a little saying, okay, it's an epidemic, but it will pass. But the gravity of the situation is said by the president and the prime minister who spoke yesterday, saying how dangerous coronavirus could be. And of course, we heard this morning that he was a minister, but he was retired, but he was only 74, died in a hospital, a Parisian hospital for coronavirus.
I read that as well.
And that makes everybody very afraid, I think, and very obedient.
You underline the importance of having political leaders who have the thoughtfulness and maturity to take dangerous situations seriously.
Yes, absolutely. That seems very important.
Yes, it is. Can you tell us about how the psychoanalytic community has reacted to this crisis?
Well, you know, psychoanalysts are, as everybody, I think, very scared. The difference is probably that we have less defenses than somebody who never went to analysis. So maybe we are even more scared than our patients. And that is one point important. So the analytic community, as the normal, the other population, reacted in the same way. Everybody listened very carefully to all the recommendations, and we all started now about 10 days to see our patients online and not in person. Which is, I must tell you, that maybe some Americans are used to it, but for French psychoanalysis, it is very, very new. Because I can tell you that French psychoanalysis would consider, before this crisis, this sanitary crisis, we would say that Skype analysis was practically a sin.
Yes, I've had that impression from French psychoanalysts.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So the problem is that now we are telling our patients that we are in fully seeing, because we ask them to come to be online. Now, the patients reacted very interestingly, because some, my own clients, one who was a young woman in analysis for now 5 or 6 months, told me, and I appreciated her answer. She told me it was, I was so scared to come to analysis, but I so much appreciated this new frame, and I feel so comforted that it was the real frame I needed, that I prefer not to alterate this frame, and I will come back with when the epidemic is ending. So that's one reaction.
Right.
Now, some people in just the day before, we could no more drive from one place to the other, because now you cannot go from Paris to Deauville. You are obliged to stay in your own town. So the day before this was taken as decision, many of our colleagues preferred to be isolated in their country houses, where they could see the patients online, of course, but have a garden and have the advantages of being probably in the country. That means that two of my supervisees call me for the supervision weekly, but they are no more in Paris, but they see their patients.
They see them online, right?
They see them online.
Online, right.
Online. Now, I will give you my ideas on the online, how I do cope with the online questions. First of all, I discovered that the patients who asked for Skype and not the telephone, probably they simply needed to see, to verify that I was alive. So one or two sessions after, because I prefer the telephone, I must tell you, I asked them if they agreed, and they all agreed. I said that we will meet on Skype, say hello, and then put off the image.
As if they were walking in and lying on
the couch. Exactly. And we do the same thing at the end of the session to say goodbye. Because personally, I felt very strongly the desire to give them, to this odd situation, to give them frames, a frame. So that is part of the frame. Other part of the frame is that I asked them to always be in the same place when they call me. I said it can be your garage, it can be your car, it can be your kitchen, I don't mind, but please find a place where you feel comfortable to have your sessions, and don't change it.
So you really suggest the physical aspects of the frame
exactly.
To your patients. All right. That's worth noting, yes.
Well, I don't know, but I felt it like that, you see.
Yes.
So that they are a little contained. They choose a place, but they feel the frame bodily.
But they also feel the frame of your telling them what to do, which is similar to, in a sense, what you do by inviting them into your office. You provide that frame, and you're now saying, to them, you don't have to make a decision each time about how and where we're going to do this. I'm suggesting to you the way I would like you to do it. And that becomes part of the frame as well. They're following your suggestion.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yes.
I want to go back to something you said before about the sin that the French analysis would preach.
Yes.
It strikes me as useful for all of us that the things we thought were sins, or if not sins, were ill-advised, are now being challenged in many areas of life in general, and certainly in clinical practice. And perhaps when we come out of this, in whatever shape we come out of this in, we will be hesitant to proselytize what we think is sin and not sin.
Mm-hmm.
Because we will have learned that what we were sure was incompatible with good clinical work, lo and behold, you can do important clinical work in.
Yes, I totally agree. And I was wondering how we will go back to sessions, because we have patients who come from very far away. They take the metro. They are stuck in traffic jam. How will we explain them that they must come back?
Right.
And that made me think, you know, I had with Shmuel Ehrlich and a Latin American colleague, we were asked by Claudio Edzerich to write down the IPA rules for Skype analysis. And we had said that we wanted the cure to have started in person for at least 1 month, and then it could be on Skype, but with sessions in person at least every 3 months, 1 week.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's important, the body is part of the cure.
Sure. The way I phrase it is that it's important to be able to smell your patient.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
Can you share with us any particular clinical examples that speak to the issue not only of the onlineness of our clinical life today, but also what it's like for you to be in this shared, scared place with your patients?
Mm-hmm. Yes, as I said, I think I was impressed, I must say, after about 10 or 12 days of this new practicing. I'm impressed that the patients seem much less scared than we are, probably.
Hmm.
Because they continue, the ones who are, they continue well, there's a total continuity between the sessions before and the sessions now. And that is something which made me reflect on it. I said maybe, probably, the defensive systems are working, and maybe to sometimes a sort of denial.
And that's always a clinical question. Do you address that denial or not? There is healthy denial, and then there's denial as it lives in the clinical situation. And
you know, Harvey, what interests me especially is that one of my supervisors with whom I worked a lot in my life and who was a kind of mentor for me, he wrote that in some difficult cases, and he meant when the patient is in danger because he's physically ill, or the analyst is in danger because he's physically ill, but now we could extend into this situation, the analytic work needs a community of denial.
Share with me how you understand that.
I understand that if we were both patient and analyst thinking this man has a generalized cancer and he will probably die in less than 1 year, I think we could not continue to be analysts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or we would be analysts in the sense of addressing whatever the needs are of the patient at this time.
Yeah, right. And not the real psychic messages.
Right. And so for now, you feel that the analyst needs a little denial about themselves and their patient, and the patient needs a little denial about themselves and their analyst.
Absolutely. I think we should invent a new concept. I was thinking this morning, thinking of our meeting,
yes,
of a soft community of denial.
I love it. A soft community of denial.
Yes.
That's terrific. That's
or
terrific.
A community of soft denial. I don't know how to put it.
All right. We're going to put that on the notes of the podcast. That's terrific. Marilia, this is such a difficult time, and you're older, and it's even more difficult for you.
Mm-hmm.
What sustains you through this time? Clearly your work. I mean, that you're thinking of new concepts and formulating new ideas in this crisis. Obviously, you're so invested and alive in this. Is that what sustains you?
Yes, I think really. First of all, I will put the first thing, literature. I'm a great, great reader, a reader of literature.
Uh-huh.
I love Japanese literature. I read a lot. Now I'm discovering African literature, which is very new. And I can tell you that there are two or three Nigerian writers who are absolutely great.
Do you care to mention their names for our audience?
They are so complicated. Yes, one is called Adichie. And she wrote a book which is called America, but with an H after the last A.
Okay.
Remarkable book.
Okay.
So, literature. My work, because I work, and I'm presently writing a paper for the International Journal on repetition, not only the compulsion to repeat, but they want the French view of repetition compulsion. So I have that. And I must tell you also that I love cooking. So I cook, but what was in the beginning tragic for me, because I cooked and after I didn't know what to do. So now I'm cooking things that I could put in the freezer and keep, jars, how do you say, compost, when you pears and apples.
Yes.
Well, I do things like that. And when I do something else that must be eaten, I give some to my neighbors, and there is a very nice community which is totally new to. I have two of my neighbors. They do a soup and they send me a bowl of soup. I do a jam and I send them jam. And that's very, very nice. Because I think it shows something that the Greek poet Elitis, very well known, had written during the war. He said, it's a poem saying, isn't it a pity that we really need the catastrophes to show also our humanity?
Marilia, listening to you speak, even for this brief time, there's such an array of images you've shared with me and our listeners. We start with Paris being empty, vacant, in the worst sense of the word, and we cover the aliveness both with your patients, with your thinking about your patients, with your coming up with new ideas about your analytic work with your patients. And then you speak of not only the pleasures of cooking, which speaks to all of us, but the pleasures of sharing in their community. And that's a lesson for all of us to both tolerate the emptinesses that we're all feeling and to be softer about our notion of sin, certainly, and to embrace pleasures, sensual and community that you've demonstrated for us. Thank you. Thank you for sharing this, and thank you for your lifelong contribution to our work.
Thank you, Harvey.
Thank you for listening. If I may, I'd like to ask you to help us publicize our podcast by rating us on iTunes or simply sharing it with a friend. You can also visit our webpage, ipaoffthecouch.org, where you can both subscribe and also add your comments. I'd also like to acknowledge the lovely rendition of Beethoven's Opus 18th String Quartet by the Allegri String Quartet on the Vivat label.